Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon, April 15th, the day our income taxes are due. And the question of the hour is, where is your money going? In fiscal year 2015, the federal government projected to spend about $3.9 trillion, which makes up 21% of the U.S. economy. And we're going to be talking about the three groups: mandatory spending, discretionary spending, and interest on the debt, and find out where the large chunk of your money is going and ask, what do you think about that? Our guest this hour is Lindsay Kashgarian, Research Director for the National Priorities Project. The mission is to make our complex federal budget transparent and accessible so people can exercise their right and responsibility to oversee and influence how their tax dollars are spent. She works on education and workforce spending, social insurance, entitlement spending, debt and deficits, tax policy, and revenue generation. The NPP was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2014 in recognition of their pioneering work to track federal spending on the military and to promote a U.S. federal budget that represents American priorities, including funding for people's issues such as inequality, unemployment, education, health, and the need to build a green economy. We'll be welcoming phone calls if you'd like more information about where the money is coming from. How much do corporations pay? How much do individuals pay? How big is the debt? And we'll look at the pie of where our money is going. We'd love to hear your calls. As you send in your taxes, or maybe you've already done this, do you do so thinking, I'm doing a good thing? Or are you concerned about where some of your income tax dollars may be going? Do you think that the pie should be configured differently than it is? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Thank you very much for being with us, Lindsay. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Let's start with a little bit of a history. When did we get the income tax in the United States?
Well, the income tax, as you suggest, has not always been with us. The United States has gone through several iterations of how it collects revenues from folks, including excise taxes, corporate taxes, individual income taxes. We all have payroll taxes that we pay. So there are many different ways that the U.S. kind of collects revenues. Income tax has grown increasingly important over the years.
Yeah. I had read that early on there were just really excise taxes, right? Alcohol taxes, tobacco taxes. The government needed some money, so they taxed that, but they got
That's right. Excise taxes were one of the first forms of taxes in the United States, and up until the mid part of the 20th century, they were pretty important. Nowadays, excise taxes are really only about 3% of the revenues that the federal government brings in.
Mm-hmm. All right, as we look to start with a general statement here at where the largest chunk of every dollar that we pay in federal income taxes goes, 27% or 27 cents on the dollar goes to, da-da,
goes to the military and spending on war. Now, that's of the income tax dollars. That's, you know, what we're all filing today, our federal income tax returns. And like you say, 27 cents of every dollar goes to spending on the military and war.
And
that's the biggest chunk.
Has it been that way for quite some time? Is it always the biggest chunk?
It has been the biggest chunk, yes, for quite a while, certainly for as long as I've been tracking it. And what's interesting about that, too, is how that breaks down. For instance, that doesn't include spending on veterans benefits, like health care for veterans and through the Veterans Administration and other things that people are familiar with. That's only 6 cents of every dollar that goes to veterans. And even of the 27 cents that goes to the military, only about 6 cents of that actually goes to our troops.
So the rest of it goes to planes and bombs and...
The rest of it goes to Pentagon bureaucracy, to nuclear weapons, to development of new weapons systems, Notably, quite a lot of it goes to defense contractors, which have grown over the years. Used to be a much smaller percentage of the Pentagon budget, and today about half of the Pentagon budget goes to contractors.
Hmm. When you look at that figure, being somebody who looks at where all our money is going, does that strike you as a pretty large part of the pie, about right, or what do you think?
Well, when you ask Americans, certainly defense is a high priority, but equally high priorities are jobs and the economy, education, and other pieces that have nothing to do with that. When you ask Americans what they see as top priorities, defense is certainly up there, but two-thirds of Americans also say that they see education as a top priority for the federal government. But education spending is only 2.5 cents of every tax dollar.
2.5 cents? That's almost, well, it's not nothing, but that's not very much, is it?
Most of us would throw away 2.5 cents without thinking.
Absolutely. I always pick up 2.5 cents, though, if I find it on the street, or 2 cents, as the case may be. Break down the categories. We have discretionary spending. We have mandatory spending. What's mandatory?
Mandatory spending is spending on things like Social Security and Medicare. And what really distinguishes it from discretionary spending is the fact that mandatory spending goes somewhat on autopilot. It's written into laws that Congress does not revisit every year, things like the eligibility rules for Social Security, the fact that you become eligible to start receiving retirement benefits when you turn 62, and the amount of those benefits. All of those rules for Social Security are written into existing law, and Congress doesn't revisit them and change them every single year to peg it to how much money we want to spend on Social Security. Another big difference with Social Security from discretionary spending in particular is that Social Security has a trust fund. So when you get your pay stub from your job, it shows you how much you paid in federal income tax, but it also shows you how much you paid in FICA or Social Security or Medicare tax. And those taxes go into trust funds. They're set aside and they pay for Social Security or Medicare, but they aren't available for general spending on other things like the military or education.
And that's a bit, what, about 7% of our take-home check? A little over that?
So Social Security, for instance, there's a portion that you pay and there's a portion that your employer pays, and those portions have fluctuated some over the last couple of years, especially during the recession, but they're about equal. And yes, it's about 7% of what you pay. Of course, most of us get that back when we hit retirement age. Most Americans take advantage of Social Security.
And discretionary spending, what's in that category?
Discretionary spending is accounts for almost all of our spending on the military, and military spending is over half of all discretionary spending. It's about 55%. It also includes spending on education, as I said before, although education, again, is a small piece of discretionary spending. It's only about 6% of all discretionary spending.
Mm-hmm.
It includes spending on transportation, on science, through places like NASA. It includes spending on energy and the environment, which is only 3% of our discretionary budget. So it's almost everything else besides these major programs like Social Security and Medicare.
Isn't that amazing when you look at where the pie is? 3% on energy and the environment is minuscule, isn't it?
It is. It's about $38 billion in 2015. And if you compare that to military is over $600 billion.
Mm. And in terms of, we talked early on the show about how much money the government will spend, $3.9 trillion during 2015. In terms of how much money they are bringing in, the tax revenue, you have that broken down too, and it's rather interesting. How much individual income taxes, how much from corporate taxes, excise taxes, custom duties, and other. Why don't you start with individual income taxes? How much will the government take in?
That's right. So overall in revenue in 2015, the government's bringing in about $3.2 trillion. And about $1.5 trillion, or almost half of that, is coming from individual income taxes. That's the single biggest source of revenue for the federal government. The next biggest is payroll taxes, which, of course, is also paid by individuals. And that's about a third of all the revenues that the federal government will bring in. And then when you look at the next biggest piece, which is corporate taxes, that's only 11% of the revenues, or only $340 billion. So individuals are paying, in income taxes alone, four times as much as corporations are.
And the corporate tax used to be higher, right?
It did. It used to make up a much bigger percentage of the total federal government revenues. So if you look back at the 1940s, for instance, what you'll see is that corporate income tax used to make up about 40%, or what, almost as much as how much individual taxes make up now.
40%? Really?
Yes, and today, like I said, it's only 11%.
You also have written about tax breaks that go into the federal tax code, special low tax rates on capital gains, a deduction for home mortgage interest in order to promote certain activities deemed beneficial to society. In essence, you say those tax breaks really function as a type of government spending.
That's right. If you combine all tax breaks, so all of the money that individuals and corporations get back from the federal government on their income taxes, that actually adds up to over $1 trillion, and it adds up to a little bit more than all discretionary spending combined.
In terms of borrowing money, we every now and then, it seems, with some regularity every other year or so, there's a big outcry about the debt in this country. In terms of borrowing money, how much are we borrowing? And give us a historical comparison here. Is the debt a huge part of the pie here?
Well, we'll be borrowing over $500 billion this year, which is certainly significant. But when you look at that as a piece of the economy, it's about 2.5% of the size of our economy, of GDP. And historically, if you look over the last 50 years or so, that's right about average. Certainly during the recession, that deficit went up to about 10% of GDP, which is significant, but also not unusual in times of deficit, in times of recession. So where we are now historically is quite average, nothing extraordinary about it.
When you talk about the mission of your organization being partially for people who live here to exercise their right and responsibility to oversee and influence how their tax dollars are spent, how do we influence how our tax dollars are spent? For instance, if you're concerned about too much money going into the military, where the a lot of money is going, how do you influence that?
Well, right now we are still fairly early in our annual discretionary budget process. That process has a few major steps. First, the president introduces his proposed budget, which is not legally binding. It's essentially just a request. That happened in February. Then the House and Senate each pass budgets of their own, which happened in March. And coincidentally, today is not only tax day, but it's also the deadline for the House and Senate to come to an agreement on overall spending levels for the government for fiscal year 2016, which will start on October 1st. Now, it does not look like they are going to meet that deadline. They're probably going to give themselves a couple of more weeks. But that would set overall high-level spending levels for defense and for non-defense spending. And then over the summer, the House and Senate are supposed to come up with a series of 12 appropriations bills that would fund the different segments of government for fiscal year 2016. They haven't actually followed that process and come up with 12 appropriations bills for 20 years now, but that is the normal process, the way it's supposed to go.
Are they having big fights right now about overall spending or not?
Yes, there are quite big fights about overall spending. One of the big issues right now, of course, is sequestration, which is a word that people have probably heard thrown around quite a lot. It originated with the Budget Control Act of 2011, which set spending levels for the government. And if the government went above those spending levels, it would kick into place sequestration, which is these across-the-board blind cuts to bring spending back down to the designated levels. Now, for the last 2 years, we've had the Ryan Murray budget deal that took some pressure off and basically lifted those budget caps a little bit. But that budget deal ended in fiscal year 2015. So going forward for fiscal year 2016, those budget caps are back in place. And one of the big fights that we'll see now and in the months to come is whether to keep those caps in place or whether there will be another deal analogous to the Ryan Murray deal or some other sort of resolution.
We're going to welcome phone calls on this tax day. Where is your money going, and what do you think about where your money is going? We're welcoming your phone calls, and we'll start taking them as soon as you decide to call. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Lindsay Kashkarian is our guest, and she is research director for the National Priorities Project. 800-486-8655. The email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. And we're looking at the pie and what is mandatory, the discretionary spending, the debt, paying back on the debt, and government taxes, income taxes on individuals. All of that is up for discussion this hour, our favorite day of the year, Tax Day. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's start phone calls for our guest, Lindsay. 800-486-8655 is our number, and Michael in Maribel is our first caller. Hi, Michael.
Good afternoon to you.
To you, too.
I would like to follow up on two points that the your interviewer raised, the first of which is military expenditure by the federal government. You asked whether the 27% was appropriate or not. Britain has announced that they intend to limit military expenditure to 2% of GDP. Japan, for at least 20 years now, has limited their military expenditure to 1% of GDP. We are spending roughly, at least when I investigated a number of years ago, 5.9% of our economy on military, and that's all through the government. We also spend on military more than the next 18 countries combined, and it really doesn't get us any place. I mean, that's the first point I want to raise, and I'll ask your guest to comment. The second point that I want to raise, though, is corporate taxes. In the 1950s, as your guest pointed out, individuals and corporations were paying roughly the same amount. Today, we are not. Nevertheless, if you look at net income, and if you look at stock values, corporations are just making enormous amounts of money, even in real terms, compared to where they were in the 50s. Nevertheless, with, like, for example, the Ryan budget looks to reduce corporate tax rate from 35% to 25%. And, I mean, this is just egregious that corporations are getting away with making tremendous amounts of profit, yet not paying their fair share, and yet they want to be treated as persons legally.
Thank you for your call, Michael. Start with whichever issue you'd like. Lindsay.
Sure. I'll take each of them. Thanks, Michael, for those are both good questions. First, on the military spending and the U.S. place in the world, I have a bit different numbers, but as you noted, the U.S. spends as much as some number of the next highest spending countries combined, and that includes countries that we typically would think of as high spenders, including China and particularly Russia. It may be closer to the next 9 or 10 highest spending countries, but either way, the U.S. is by far the highest military spender in the world. And so there is a real question about whether that level of spending is necessary to keep the U.S. safe and to keep the world safe. Now, there are certainly a lot of places in the Pentagon budget where it's not clear that that spending is being put to good use. Another thing that budget watchers frequently note is that the Pentagon is the only major federal agency that has never been subjected to a federal audit. And there was a law passed in the early 90s that required that major agencies would pass audits. The Department of Defense has managed to get extension after extension, and so far has not passed an audit. They're supposed to do so in 2017. But that lack of transparency around where the money is really going has led a lot of people to believe that, you know, there are certainly major cuts in defense that could be made without sacrificing security. And in fact, the Pentagon itself has identified in recent years around $70 billion in programs and funding that they would be willing to cut and that Congress has not allowed for various reasons. So there's certainly an argument to be made that U.S. military spending does not need to be as high as it is. To your second point on corporate taxes, certainly corporate taxes are a much smaller percentage of federal revenues than they used to be. We know that. And we do know that different budget proposals would treat that very, very differently. As you noted, the House budget, again, this year suggests very little in the way of specifics about taxes, but it's very likely that they would want to lower the corporate tax rate. Notably, even President Obama would lower the corporate tax rate, but both of them say they would close loopholes for corporations, and the big difference is that President Obama has actually specified what some of those loopholes would be and how he would draw in additional revenue. When you look at tax breaks that corporations get, that's a huge piece of federal spending. And there's been work done that shows for specific corporations, major multi-billion dollar corporations like Pfizer and Verizon have paid nothing in federal income taxes or even received refunds or rebates at the same time that they're making billions of dollars in profits and even receiving billions of dollars in federal contracts.
The reason being what? How can that be justified?
Well, there are a number of loopholes that are among the most popular. One of them, of course, is holding profits offshore. This has been a big issue over the last year. U.S. corporations that are able to hold their profits overseas can do so essentially indefinitely without ever paying U.S. income taxes, and they certainly use that as a way to avoid paying U.S. income taxes. So one study said that, for instance, Verizon...
That's right.
Bank of America had $17 billion in profits offshore in 2012, on which it paid no U.S. taxes. If those profits had been subject to taxes, it would have brought in $4 billion, and that's just for one corporation.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the military, I didn't know that they hadn't had a federal audit in what's going on quite a few years, considering the fact that as we pay our taxes today, so much money is going to the military. You would have thought that members of Congress would demand an audit, because it's such a huge chunk of the budget.
Yes, indeed. You would think that. There have been members of Congress who have tried to pass legislation to further enforce that audit. Like I said, it is already in legislation on the books, but the Department of Defense has gotten extensions. Congressman Barbara Lee has introduced legislation that would push the issue by essentially introducing, essentially denying the Pentagon additional funds until it was able to pass an audit. And even the new Defense Secretary has said that even though he's in favor of increasing Pentagon spending, he's acknowledged that there are many places where Pentagon spending is wasteful.
We have this email from Jane. How much is it costing our government annually to carry all that debt?
Well, how much is it costing our government? So payment on debt is one of the expenses that our federal government has. In terms of the total federal budget, payment on debt is about 7% of the total federal budget. Now, it's disproportionately paid by our income tax dollars, so it's about 15 cents of every income tax dollar that you pay this year will go toward payment on the national debt.
And let's go to Helen next in New Glarus. Hi, Helen.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm wondering if your guest could tell me how much the American taxpayer spends on aid to Israel, and then how does that compare to other countries?
Well, Israel is among the top five countries that receive foreign aid. Just to make a broader note about foreign aid, it's an extremely small portion of our federal budget. It's only about 1% of our discretionary budget goes to foreign aid. So that's a frequent misconception. People think that we're giving away a lot of money to other countries, but it's actually quite a small piece. But the biggest recipients are Afghanistan, Iraq, and Israel. Those are the top three.
And thanks very much for your call, Helen. Our number is 800-486-8655. Navarro is next. Hi, Navarro.
Hi. I wanted to get back to the military spending, and I am just, I don't know what the percentage, maybe you guys already said, I might have missed it, what percent goes to veterans. But I wish a big batch of the military budget went to the veterans because they're not doing so good.
And that's not included in the military budget, right? The veterans benefits, separate part
that's
of the budget.
Right. That's a very important observation. Depending on who you ask, some folks will include the veterans benefits as a piece of the military budget, but we do not. So when we say that 27 cents of your tax dollar goes to the military, we're not talking about veterans benefits in that. Of your tax dollar, only about 6 cents goes to veterans benefits.
And does your organization have a policy recommendation in that regard? Do you make recommendations of which areas need more money?
We do not make recommendations, but what we do is look at polling of what Americans say that they want. And certainly, you know, support for our troops and support for our veterans is extremely high. And people's wishes on for military spending, or people are much more divided. So certainly, you know, I think there would be an argument to be made based on polling and what Americans say their priorities are, that veterans may not be getting as much compared to the military as a lot of folks would like to see.
Thanks, Navarro, for your call. Caller asked, do you know what state contributes the most to the federal government?
There is an answer to that question. I can tell you, if you want to look at how much your state pays, how much the average taxpayer pays in income taxes to your state, you can see that on our website. We have a whole tax receipt section where you can see the average income taxes paid by each state. The state with the highest average income taxes is Connecticut at about $20,000, compared to the U.S. average of about $13,000 per taxpayer.
Hmm. Let's go to another caller, Ken in Elgin, Illinois. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Very good. You know what? I was just calling. I just tuned in, and I just had a real quick question for you. At the end of every tax season, you always hear about X amount of dollars that have not been claimed for the year. And I was just wondering if you could give me an idea what happens to that money?
Of unclaimed tax refunds, for instance?
Right.
Well, that money would stay in the United States federal fund. So the way that we look at your income tax dollars is we look at federal funds, which is the general pot of money, of revenue raised by the U.S. government. There are trust funds, which are separate, like the Social Security Trust Fund, that usually come from designated sources and are used to pay for designated expenses like Social Security. Federal funds is the bigger pot of money, and any refunds that people don't claim would stay in that big pot of federal funds.
And tell me more about these surveys that you've done, where Americans want their money to go. Can we talk about that more? Where do we want our money to go?
Yes, we can certainly talk about that. Americans are pretty consistent about a lot of the top priorities, and certainly over the last few years have been very consistent in rating jobs in the economy among, if not the number one priority. Usually that's about 65 to 70% of Americans rate that as among the top priorities. Also pretty high, consistently high, is education spending, where two-thirds of Americans say that they think improving education, the education system, is a top priority for Congress and the president. Folks have placed Social Security very high. Again, about two-thirds of Americans say that keeping the Social Security system sound is a key issue facing the president and Congress. And also health care, usually, you know, a vast majority of Americans say that health care programs like Medicare or Medicaid are high priorities as well.
And in terms of education spending, where does the small amount of money that we give to federal education through our income taxes, where is that money going, federal money on education? Where is it spent?
Yeah, so one piece of education spending, for instance, through your tax dollar, the average taxpayer in the United States, like I said, pays about $13,000 in income taxes per year. Of that $13,000, only about $328 per year goes toward education, federal education programs. And that $328 includes about $169 for forms of aid for higher education, like Pell Grants, work study, and other student aid.
Mm-hmm.
About $64 goes toward federal funding for special education.
Mm.
Other pieces of that include the Title I program that gives aid to schools serving disproportionately disadvantaged or lower-income students and other federal programs. But as we've said, that's only about 2.5 cents of every dollar.
And when you say Americans put jobs and the economy way at the top, 65 to 70% wanting money going there, how is money going into both those areas?
Well, one way that it goes through, there are unemployment and labor programs. So of the $13,000 average for U.S. taxpayer, a little over 1,000 goes to programs in what we would call unemployment and labor. And that includes just $30 a year for the average taxpayer for job training and employment.
And I would imagine that if you got more extensive answers to the research that you do on where we want our money to go, do you think that you would get a number of people saying that they would be in favor of stimulus programs created by the government to create jobs?
Yes, certainly. That is one sort of natural interpretation of the support for jobs and economic programs. One thing that's certainly coming into question in the current budget cycle in Congress and the decisions that they're making will be spending on infrastructure, which is generally seen you know, both as something that we need, but also as a jobs program.
We welcome phone calls on this tax day. We are finding out where your money goes, and importantly, we're asking you where you would like your money to go. A large part of it goes to the military. We're looking at smaller amounts that go to education, veterans, benefits, running the government, housing and community, Medicare and health, Social Security, unemployment and labor, energy and the environment, international affairs, science and transportation. If you were in charge of the pie, where would you put your money for each dollar that you are sending to the federal government today if you haven't sent it earlier? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. We always appreciate lively conversation on our Facebook page, where you can write down your thoughts about where you would like your money going, and people can respond to that. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Phone number 800-486-8655, and we go to Henry in Racine next. Hi, Henry.
Hi. I just have a couple quick questions for the guest. I, when we talk about taxes, I want to know, where does she feel that the Federal Reserve falls into all of this? And does she think that we should have our monetary system nationalized, or should we continue to have a non-government private institution of banking elite running the monetary system?
I don't know if that's within your purview, but if it is, take it on, Lindsay.
Sure. Henry, I know that's a question that a lot of people want an answer to. We at National Priorities Project certainly don't take any position on the Federal Reserve, and not particularly on monetary policy either, to be honest. We look at the federal budget. The Federal Reserve is not a significant part of that budget, but you know, it is an important institution for the United States that has, and those policies that the Federal Reserve has enacted over the last few years, especially throughout the recession, have certainly played an important role in how the United States has recovered. So it's an important question.
And let's go to Art in Clinton. Hi, Art.
Hi.
Hi.
If I was voting, I'd vote for quite a bit for education. But my question is, how do I, when I look at my real estate taxes and state taxes, a large majority of that goes for education. So how would I, how do I factor that into my desire for spending more taxes or less on a national basis without accounting for where the lion's share of money comes from, and that is state and local?
Lindsay.
Well, that's a great question. One answer to that is, of course, it's true that one of the major sources for education around the country is local property taxes. But that presents a lot of problems in places with lower property values or places, especially lower income places that have a combination of lower property values and perhaps fewer owners and perhaps greater educational needs. That can really contribute to disparities in educational funding. And one of the major roles for federal government spending that I mentioned is through the Title I program, which distributes additional funds to schools that serve disadvantaged students. There's a lot of focus right now on income inequality and specifically on inequality of opportunity, where students who are lower income may also be served in school districts that are lacking in resources. And making up a lot of that difference requires being able to pull funding from a broader source than perhaps your local property taxes if that tax base itself is not solid. So I think that's one definite role for federal funding in education. Of course, also, we know that at the higher levels of education, the cost of attending college has gone up astronomically over recent decades. It used to be that people could work a summer job and actually pay their college tuition for the year with the earnings from that summer job. That's no longer possible. And many of the major programs to help address the rising costs of higher education are through federal programs like Pell Grants, like work study, things that are available to lower income students and that really make possible college for a lot of lower income and perhaps first generation students.
Mm-hmm. As you look from, thanks very much, Art, for the call, generation or decade to decade in terms of the total spending in the country, has the pie shifted in any major ways from decade to decade? More money for, I don't know, veterans benefits, more money for interest on the debt, more money for education, less money, or has it stayed essentially the same or within a few percentage points?
Yes. So one of the things that we look at National Priorities Project in particular is the relationship over time between military spending and all other domestic spending. And there, especially over the last 15 years, as we've engaged in multiple wars around the world, you see definite differences. So, for instance, military spending is frequently higher than non-military spending, but it's made up an increasingly bigger part of the pie as in recent years as we've engaged in these wars, and especially over the last few years as we've seen drastic cutbacks in domestic spending.
All right, let's go to more phone calls, and it's Jan in Milwaukee. Hi, Jan.
Yeah, hi. I got a couple comments. The first comment I got is that politicians love to take budgets and attack this or that thing and freaking out citizens by using huge numbers. You know, oh, this program is $38 billion. We got to cut it. It's so much money. But if they were to talk about percentages of what's actually coming out of your dollar and we get these small percentages, I think people have a better grasp on which projects are worthy of funding or changing. And to dovetail on that, I wonder if your group has ever done a survey of what people think they are spending on stuff. I know earlier you mentioned foreign aid is a classic example that people think we're spending so much, and it's really just a pennies on the dollar. Same with NAFTA and things. I just think if people had a better understanding of where their taxes are going, that they wouldn't object to them as much, and they have a better idea of what should be funded and what not.
Thanks, Jen. That's do we have much of an idea where our money is going?
Yes. Thanks, Jen. Yes. Well, foreign aid is a classic example. We ourselves at National Priorities Project don't conduct surveys, but like I said, we monitor surveys, and according to some, most Americans think that we spend between 25% and 30% of our federal budget on foreign aid. And as I said, that's actually closer to 1%. So that's a tremendous difference.
Sure is.
And I think that obviously having the real facts and knowing where the federal budget is actually going would certainly inform people's opinion. That same survey, and there have been projects that show that when you give people correct information about how much of our budget goes to foreign aid, there are many fewer people who want to see that cut, than, which is understandable. If you think something is 30%, you may want it to be cut. If you find out it's only 1%, you may feel just fine about that. And so there are no doubt other examples like that. Military spending is another example of that. Lots of polls show that people want to spend more on military spending, but every once in a while someone does a poll where they actually first tell people how much we spend on the military and war and then ask them. And in that context, there are many fewer people who want to spend more. So I think having information is key, and that's really our primary goal at National Priorities Project, is to make this information accessible so that people can go forward and vote and contact their congressmen and make decisions with accurate information at hand.
Well, it's kind of inexplicable, isn't it? Because think of all the tens of thousands of people who are going to mailboxes today, standing in line, making sure they meet the deadline to give the government their money, and they don't know where the money is going. I find that hard to understand. People keep track of finances their own all the time.
Right. Well, it's a shame that the IRS themselves don't send a tax receipt.
That's right.
Since they don't, we try to provide that service.
Thanks very much, Jen, for your call. We have a couple lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Now would be the time to call before we run out of time. Our guest this hour is Lindsay Kashkarian. She's Research Director for the National Priorities Project, and we are talking about what's going on with your tax dollars. What's the mandatory spending, discretionary spending in this country, how much the government is taking in, where they're getting the money, how much corporate taxes, how much individual taxes, and perhaps most importantly for our conversation, when you hear about where the money is going, what do you think? Okay, do you say, that's all right with me? I want my money to be going for whatever. Or do you think, ooh, I don't like that. If I had my way, I would take the pie and arrange it however you might arrange it. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Chris sends this email. If we were to pass legislation to raise the minimum wage, wouldn't that make more taxable income available at a higher rate, since corporate taxes are relatively low to that of the individual taxpayer? Wouldn't this also lower corporate earnings, meaning that they would pay even less than they already do, offsetting those extra salary expenses?
Well, certainly if we were to raise the minimum wage, yes, there would be more income and more taxable income. There would also be fewer people who would qualify for tax refunds and tax credits like the earned income tax credit, which is an extremely effective tax credit, but goes toward the lowest income Americans. And in 2012, we spent $64 billion on the earned income tax credit. So if instead many of those low earners, those are all employed people, you have to earn money to get the earned income tax credit. If those people earned at a higher rate, many fewer of them would qualify, and some of them would turn, in fact, into taxpayers. So that would certainly make a difference.
Let's go to Tony in Madison next. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Thank you for letting me call in, because the gentleman that received the phone call, I said it's 65. It's close to 67%. It's 2/3. The public doesn't know that. It's been going on.
What are you talking about? What's 2/3, Tony?
65% of the funds go to the military.
It's 65%, he's saying. Is that true? That's not true, is it? That's higher.
So it's about 55% of discretionary spending goes to the Pentagon and war spending.
And that comes out to what? I have a chart from you, $640 billion.
Yes, actually, that's a we've have a slightly revised figure for 2015, which is closer to $600 billion, but it is by far the biggest piece of the discretionary budget.
Let's go to Reed in Clintonville next. Hi, Reed.
Oh, yes. Good afternoon. Say, I'd like to bring the conversation a little bit closer to home, at least statewide. I'd like to address the issue of where I would like my money to go, but also where I would not like it to go. And first, I would like my money to go back into the public school system, which at one time was a Wisconsin flagship system that was the Blue Ribbon, and I really cannot say enough about it. It was one of the highest quality public educational systems in the nation. Where I would not like my money to go is to voucher schools. 100% of the voucher schools here in our state are religious schools, and the monies that are being drained, siphoned from our public system, are going to support those religious schools, which, by the way, do not have to accept special needs students. However, our public schools are mandated to accept special needs students, and they must address their needs with even fewer dollars than in years past. And I'll just hang up and listen to any comments on the air.
All
and
right.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks, Reed. And it brings to mind that maybe we should do a show on where our state tax money is going as well. Thank you very much for your call. In terms of state taxes, you've got so many different systems in this country, don't you? I wonder how many states don't have state income taxes, and do you have a feel for that?
I definitely don't have any numbers on state income taxes. What we do is look at federal spending into each of the 50 states in the District of Columbia. So, for instance, certainly on our website you could find information about how much money comes into your state from the federal government, including things like how much money for education.
Okay. Let's go next to Tim in Cudahy. Hi, Tim.
Hi there. I was wondering if you knew what percentage of the American people don't pay any federal taxes?
Don't pay any federal income taxes, I'm assuming you mean.
Yes. Let's assume that's what it means.
Yes, and there are a significant number of Americans who do not end up owing federal income tax. Now, what's interesting about that is that they're actually spread over the income spectrum. So something that's become slightly famous over the last few years, I don't have the number in front of me about exactly what proportion of taxpayers pay no taxes, but we know, for instance, that some of them are at the very highest end of the income spectrum.
And we thank you very much for the call. We have time for maybe, I don't know, one or two calls quickly. Diane in Milwaukee, hi.
Thank you. I think we should lift the cap on Social Security and Medicare because once the senior citizens get a cut in that, the economy is going to tank because they help their children, their grandchildren, and they help the economy. We are all job creators by spending our money. We can't let the millionaires pay a smaller percentage than the regular, ordinary person does.
Lindsay, when will that become a serious conversation in Washington, if ever?
Well, there's constantly conversation about Social Security and Medicare and how to run each system. For instance, right now, the House budget proposal would turn Medicare into a voucher system. There are various proposals on the table for Social Security. One thing in terms of Social Security and Medicare being able to pay out benefits, Social Security in particular, is expected to stay solvent, in other words, to be able to pay out 100% of its promised benefits. through the year 2033.
Lindsay, thank you very much for being with us. We have plumb run out of time. Lindsay Kashgarian, Research Director for the National Priorities Budget, joining us to discuss where our money goes on this tax day. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour, Scotty Myers for on-air production. Tomorrow during this hour, we'll be talking about recommendations for public accountability for charter schools, a new report that has just been released. News is coming up. We'll return and talk about the Arctic.